Okay, so today is the 26th of January, 2020, Sunday, day after Chinese New Year. I'm sitting here with Brother Leonard at Bodhi Heart, and he says he's been here 7 or 8 years, and he has a lot of experience dealing with different Buddhist traditions who are all represented here in Penang. So, I guess, could you just tell me more about Bodhi Heart and your time here, brother? And if you talk about that far away, it's perfect.
Right. So first and foremost, Penang Bodhi Heart, we are a layperson-run Dharma center. So we are different from a monastery in the traditional sense, where the administrator, the decision makers are purely members of the Sangha. But here at this Dharma center, everything is run by a lay people. So basically in the Malaysian context, we have two major types of Dharma center here. One is monastery run, which means that the land, the property, the deed has been given to the Sangha of a particular lineage tradition, for example, Thai Dharma Yut or Thai Mahanikai. And the decision maker, the basically everything to do with the monastery is taken care of by the Sangha, by the board, and the committee there most of the time is made up of lay people, and they are there to support the decisions made by the member of the Sangha. The second type of model that is available in Malaysia is a fully layperson run Dharma society. In this case, they have two types. One is where this particular committee that runs the place decide that they want to follow a particular teacher from a particular tradition. So they establish their Dharma center following that particular tradition, and most of the teachers invited to teach at the Dharma center belong to that tradition. So the other type, like where Bodhi Heart is, we are very unique in the sense that we invite all across the spectrum, across the three main traditions, Theravada, Mahayana, Tibetan Buddhist. And even within the Theravada system, we have Burmese, we have Thai. Within the Thai, we have Mahanikai, we have Dharma Yut. And even then, we have like Thom Pho Thin, Lom Pho Cham Nien, Ajahn Chah, Western Disciples, the Forest Monk, Dharma Yut. So we have many, many teachers coming across to Bodhi Heart. Now, the decision made in Bodhi Heart is made by the committee. The president, the vice president, the committee itself, and we take advice on matters pertaining to the Sangha. Our main Sangha advisor is Chokun King. So what we do is, if we have anything, any question pertaining to Sangha, we will refer back to Chokun King. Anything to do with Theravada, he will give his opinion to us, and then we decide whether to apply, or rather how to apply that opinion in the way we run Bodhi Heart, and also matters pertaining to the Sangha here. Most of the time, as an administrator here, I would prefer that the members of the Sangha, those who are staying at Bodhi Heart at that time, at that particular moment, they decide among themselves what they should or should not do according to the Vinaya that they are practicing. And only when or if a certain line has been crossed in Bodhi Heart, then I would only step in as the administrator to inform the members of Sangha saying here that they have already taken some action that is out of line, and that they should really decide, following the Vinaya that they're doing, whether what they're doing is right or not, and we will see how it goes from there. So in some extreme cases, I would actually need to put my foot down and invite the monk forward, so to speak, or ask them to, you know, find another place which would be more suitable to their needs according to their own practices. But most of the time, the members of Sangha staying at Bodhi Heart, they are quite amiable. They are generally agreeable, and you know, they are able to conform to whatever is needed, as long as it doesn't oppose their personal Vinaya practice too much, and also does not cross the norm that is happening here in Bodhi Heart. So, like, one case that maybe I can give example is, like, when we have different tradition monks staying together, like from the Theravada, from Tibet, from Mahayana. There was this case when there was a particular monk, a Theravada monk. He was criticizing the monks from the other tradition, from Tibetan and from the Mahayana. So at first it wasn't too bad because it's just like he just tell to the other Theravada monks. They were uncomfortable with it. They did inform me. But to me, it's like, okay, if he's just talking there, it's fine as long as he doesn't blow the whole thing out of proportion. But end up during one Dana time, he actually criticized the Mahayana and Tibetan monks, which were way more senior in their vasa, so to speak, compared to him. And I had to like call him out on that. Like, right, in Bodhihat, we invite Sangha of different traditions to come together. So there must be a mutual respect between the Sangha. I mean, you can say that according to Theravada rules, the other tradition is not, how should I put it, not valid. But because in Bodhihat, we view equally all the tradition as valid and all members of Sangha as conforming to the Sangha as intended by the Buddha. So if there's any small differences, should be understood as something unique to an individual, and they should be able to conform to the general situation in Bodhihat. If they're not able to, then they will need to either sort out their own views, or in worst case scenario, we can arrange for them to move to another center that will be able to conform to whatever they deem fit. So in that case, that monk, he wasn't too happy. He wanted out, so we actually found him another place for him to go. And yeah, basically we did not invite him back anymore. So that is how generally the centers in Malaysia are run in this case.
Okay. Okay, so would you generally say then that as long as the monks who are visiting here can just get along well enough, even if they're not from the same tradition, then everything tends to just kind of hold together nicely enough? Like, is that generally the pattern? Or like, I guess I'm just trying to get a sense of, are there recurring issues? And I'm not asking who does them in particular.
Right.
I don't want to talk behind anybody's back.
But right.
Are there particular issues? And I'm really talking more about the views here.
Right.
Are there particular views or particular issues which tend to keep coming up? Or just like this one you're saying, where one tradition kind of looks down its nose on another tradition and is, you know, speaking badly about those monks who are in the same place. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I'm kind of wondering if there are particular views or particular, beliefs which keep kind of flaring up as being something, you know, some monk or monks need to defend that, and they need to speak up on it, and they need to, I don't know what, you know, defend some territory or I don't know what.
Right. Yeah, right. Well, luckily, or should I say, thanks to the system that we have here, most of the time this issue doesn't crop up, because first and foremost, those monks who want to come to Bodhihat or who we invite to Bodhihat, they would have already done their check on Bodhihat. So they would know that Bodhihat is a multi-tradition center, Dharma center, where we have monks from different traditions coming. And in the first place, if they are not comfortable with this, they would not be here already. Because they would choose to go to another center. So that is the first sieve.
Yeah.
You know, the first filter. Second filter is when they come, myself, most of the time, I would inform them that, you know, while they are here, there are certain rules that there are, you know, if there are monks of other traditions staying here, then mutual respect is needed. And anyway, because most of the sangha staying here is not permanent, they're just passing by like maybe a week, two, maybe a month at the longest. So this would reflect on their own practice. Why I say that is because generally, like all of us, we are different human beings. We have our own way of understanding things, our own view. And the way we practice the Dharma, if we are not walking, if we don't walk the way we talk, then it would reflect in our actions, the way we talk, the way we act towards another's. And Bodhihat itself is a very interesting place. It's really a testing ground, because like I said, first and foremost, here we are not sangha based, therefore we don't enforce the vinaya strictly, and basically every monk that comes here have to practice their own vinaya. And this is where they actually get to check their own practice, because when they come, they are meeting not just monks of their own affiliation, their own tradition, their own lineage, they are meeting someone else different. And then they actually get to see how good their practice is. Because when they react to what another person is doing, and then they actually get to check whether, am I doing this right? Is the Dharma I'm learning that's controlling my behavior, is it the right thing? Is this what the Buddha is actually asking us to do? Because if we recall, if we are following the Sutta tradition or the Vinaya tradition, even when the Buddha was alive, and the monks under him, even in front of the Buddha, were even arguing, like the Vasa time when the Buddha left the community and went to the forest where he was served by the elephant and the monkey.
Right, right.
And it got so bad that until the villagers like, okay, you don't solve this, we're not going to serve you anymore. Deal with your own problem. Then only when they have faced hunger and all that, then only these monks realized like, right, maybe we're doing something wrong. We need to regulate ourselves and then invite the Buddha back and then talk to the Buddha. So in the same way in Bodhihat, you are in a situation where we don't have a strict rule. Like for example, if you go to Thailand, 4 a.m. you must wake up, 5 o'clock you need to do chanting, 6 o'clock you go on arms round. We don't have that here. So when the monks come, or even for any yogi that comes to practice, you have your own schedule, your own time of practice, you do your own thing, right? And if you're staying in a community with monks from different, same tradition but different way of practice, then you actually learn how to deal with them and on your own, and learn how to make it harmonize. So Bodhihat is unique in the sense where you are actually get to expose to such type of situation, and
yeah, that's a really good point.
And you get to really see things,
yeah,
like what you're doing.
Yeah, well, I'd like to draw on this point a bit, because, I think most monks, you know, who come from a particular tradition, they usually only stay in monasteries of their own tradition,
right,
where they have their own, you might say, house rules about,
right,
the Vinaya, their own views,
right,
and of course they enforce those views, you know, in their unique way, in pretty much all the same monasteries, same,
right,
tradition. Yeah, and then when you come here, then, yeah, if people's tempers flare up, then it kind of shows that structure was, what's the word, pampering them a little too much.
Right.
You know?
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, yeah. Something I was getting annoyed about here is how the lay people like to take photos of the monks while they're eating food.
Mm.
And in my tradition, it's kind of a real taboo.
Mm.
So I got pretty angry at one point, but now,
right,
now what I do is I bring my flashlight and I shine the flashlight at their camera if they're trying to shoot a video while I'm eating.
Right. Yeah, but even like that, you know, usually I would advise the monk, like, the food you're eating comes from their alms, from their offering, and they're not taking photo of you just to, you know, just to take, but it's for them as a memento that they've done something good. It's a, how would you say, like, remembrance that they've done something good, a dana, and when they look at the photos, they rejoice in it.
Yeah,
so,
well, I'm fine with photos, you know, before the food, you know, is offered, and while they're offering the food and all that. But,
right,
you know, like, what if one monk is a messy eater and then food is like kind of falling out of his mouth and then they shoot the picture right then?
Right.
And, you know, it's just kind of.
So then it would be a two-way. One is,
it would be nice for there to not be a photo record of that.
Right,
know?
But
yeah.
One, so it'd be on two persons, how shall I say, two persons' way of thinking now. So one is the monk. Then because I believe, I'm not very sure, but I think there is, I've heard of it before, like monks are supposed to be more careful when they're eating, the way they eat.
Should, yeah.
So again, it's a good reminder for them to be aware of what they're doing. Secondly, for the lay people themselves is to understand that, you know, even monks are human beings and everyone is practicing. And most of the time, these photos are not shared in public, but rather for their own memory.
Yeah.
So again, like when people come, they offer, they feel happy, they take photo, and then it actually encourage more people to come and do. But when they have like, and how should I put this? Like, I mean, just to be frank, just to be direct, like in some places I know of, some monks, they get so upset over this that the lay people actually don't go and support anymore.
Oh, really?
And end up the monk has to leave the place because no one wants to give him food.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I've never heard of that, but okay.
So, yeah. So it's a really a two-way relationship between the Sangha, members of the Sangha, the community of Sangha, and the community of lay people. Because, I mean, that was what the Buddha meant for the Dana point, for these two communities to come together, like support given and the monks to teach the lay person.
Sure, okay. Well, anyway,
Yeah, but again, certain monks have their own practice. So again, like in these cases, we will tell people like, okay, don't take photo. Unless it's before offering or like after, then can, but during, don't take, right? But then we would tell the monk, like, you know, maybe on your point, you can also inform them, like, you know, no photo taking, just tell them nicely, and most of the time they will actually do it.
Anyway, whoever the senior monk is right now isn't saying anything, but.
Because again, like in the Burmese tradition, they actually encourage them to take photo because one, like I said, is for them to practice.
Oh, really? They encourage this, okay.
One is for them when they're practicing to make sure that when they eat proper, the way they wear proper, and they actually carry themselves properly.
Yeah, well, the Ajahn Chah lineage teaches you to eat faster than normal.
So again, you see, in Bodhisattva, you get exposed to different style like this.
When you eat faster, your chances of spilling food go up.
Right.
You know, yeah.
So again, when you come to Bodhisattva, you get exposed to this sort of interesting situation, and then you actually see like, oh, my practice like this, their practice like this. And then, am I able to continue my own practice in spite of them doing this?
Yeah.
Or do I feel the need to conform? Or should I be upset? Then that is your own check, your own practice.
Yeah, okay.
Well, Bante, just to be clear, I'm not criticizing you per se, but generally as administrators, seeing so many monks passing by, like this is my general observation, and after a while, they actually learn how to adjust themselves. And it's good because most of the time, after Bodhisattva, they actually get to go international, and that's where they really meet all sort of weird situation. And then, I would say thanks to what they have here, they learn how to adapt better outside. Mm-hmm. So, because this is where they actually get to meet. Like you said, Bante, when you're in Thailand from Ajahn Chah Monastery, you only meet Ajahn Chah monks. And very rare you meet like Burmese Pa'au or Burmese Tango or Burmese, you know, or even Mahayana. Very rare to meet. But when you come here, you actually get to see them and you interact. And then you learn, you know, I'm not the only one doing, doing.
Well, interact is in quotation marks there.
Yeah, because, so in like this case,
I haven't exchanged even one sentence with that senior monk yet.
Right.
The Burmese monk. So how could I know his views? You know what I mean?
Right. So like I say, in this situation, most monks that pass by Bodhisattva, either they learn to adapt and they do, I wouldn't say very well, but they are able to interact with different tradition, and they can go anywhere.
Yeah, well, I learn from different people. I learn from different people, but there's, how can I put it?
And the other group of
some traditions, they have views and they live by them, you know,
right,
very consistently, but they never state the views.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So then it becomes a bit of a puzzle to figure out why are they doing this.
You can actually talk to them. And the other group, like I would say it's a minority, they blow up about the whole issue and they never come back anymore.
Yeah.
And they only stick to their own monastery.
Some of them actually feel really like affronted if you even so much as ask about certain views because they, like some of them anyway, a lot of them are pretty cool about it, but some of them can be like it's not even on the table to discuss. Like it's just, don't even question it.
Right.
You know, that is why it can be delicate to kind of figure out what's happening, but then not step on any landmines as you figure this out. You know, for Westerners, this is actually kind of challenging because we're used to a direct way of figuring this out. Right. We ask directly. Yeah, that's our normal way. But some more traditional Asian cultures will have it like, oh, don't ask directly. You have to figure things out indirectly. You have to you have to go through someone, or you have to ask around or whatever. And it takes a lot more patience that way.
So that's teaching of patience.
Well, right.
But the other thing is, like, for me, like administrator here, if I mean, and this is my own personal view, like if there's a particular monk and they're so touchy on like these things, then I would say, to me, that actually reflect very strongly on their Dharma practice and the way they hold the Vinaya, and that actually speak volume about
Well, thank you for saying that.
How they carry themselves, you see.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm not trying to pinpoint any particular monk or any particular tradition, but to me, like, you know, and in fact, during my 8 years serving here, I've met many monks that actually do this from all different traditions, whether Mahayana, Theravada, Burmese, Thai, Sri Lankan. I've met monks like this where they hold so strictly to the Vinaya, like, oh, you don't even ask. Don't you know you should be doing this? And I'm like, no, I don't. Because I'm not only serving monks from your lineage here. And so if I'm in the wrong, I did something wrong, then I really need the monks to point out to me, like, oh, I don't do this, you should treat me this way instead. You know, that's why when I meet monks that stay here, first thing I would tell you, like, even Bande, when you're here, first thing I tell you is, Bande, if I do anything wrong, you should tell me.
Well, you've never done anything to annoy me, so it's totally fine. it's just kind of tricky, you know, because there is a very careful way, and, you know, some of the Westerners I know will do this. There is a careful way of speaking where, you know, like, I'll say, like, for example, the EBTs or the early Buddhist texts, those are my favorite part of the Pali Canon. But what I don't say is, oh, like, the only part that is true and correct
it's only the EBT.
Is the early Buddhist texts, and everyone else is wrong.
Right.
Because that's confrontational now.
Right.
So I just prefer to say, like, well, you know, this is what I try to observe, and this is what I believe, and this is what my favorite is, and this is the view you're going to see in this tradition.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's try to be objective.
Right.
You know, like group A tends to believe this and group B tends to believe that.
Right.
And I'm not saying if who is right and wrong.
Right.
You know, so there is kind of a careful language which can go a long way to not making, you know, people flare up. But it's, anyway, that one's kind of hard to find sometimes. Anyway, some people are better at it. Yeah,
Because like myself, I would say I'm quite unique in the sense that I'm born and grew up with the Eastern tradition style, but my education is more towards the Western style. So it's like I'm a East Midwest kind of guy.
Actually, that's what I love about Malaysia is I've met a number of people like that, and that's great. That's so refreshing.
And even at Bodhihat here, because I serve monks and yogis from all the different traditions, so I'm actually like at the middle point where I get to see all the different traditions coming on. And even like you said, some monks that, oh, I don't believe in the Abhidhamma, it's a creation. Oh, all the Mahayana texts, someone is too free, they just write their own sutta and claim it that, you know, the Buddha said that. Or even some within Tara is like, oh, we only hold to the
the sutta. And even then, only from this particular Digha Nikaya or Madhya Nikaya. In fact, I've heard some say, like, you know, the Samyutta Nikaya and the Udana, all that, is just creation.
Okay.
So to me, it's like, okay, you're entitled to your own view. I don't have any issue. If you believe in that, fine. You know, but as long as the way you interact with the community, you don't like insist so straight, oh, only this is correct, only this is correct. Because if everyone does that,
yeah, well, that's just,
then there'll be a war going on.
Yeah.
And it will never end, you see.
Yeah.
Because to me, what I believe is each person have their own inclination. That doesn't mean they're right or wrong. It could be right in the sense that whatever they're using at that moment helps them a lot. But that doesn't mean that everything else does not work or is fake. You know, because your inclination is more towards this, and it could be that, you know, for example, like maybe person A, following the Sutanta, he's able to learn a lot, he's able to practice well. And when he read the Abhidhamma, you know, he can't relate to the Abhidhamma. That doesn't mean the Abhidhamma is false. Or, you know, not Buddhist.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
but just because
I agree.
His inclination is not towards the Abhidhamma. And again, maybe individual B, oh, to him, the Abhidhamma is everything in this world. And everything else is, you know, you don't require them, you don't need them. Even the Sutta, you don't need them. You just rely on Abhidhamma. Again, yeah, it's true because that is his own view. And he's correct in that sense. But when you're living in community, you have to learn how to live together in a harmonious way. Living, to me, the way I see it is, living harmoniously doesn't mean you need to give up your view, but rather you learn how to make your view jive with everything else. That means I'm still my own thoughts, the way I look at things still my own, but not in such a way that I clash and create havoc. We agree to disagree, basically. You know,
yeah.
Like, oh, we're all Buddhists, agree?
Yeah,
fine.
Well, that is a very,
you know,
gentlemanly way to do things. Yeah, and
yeah.
I totally agree with it. Yeah.
Right, but again, there are monks, like I said, in certain cases, some monks come, they can't conform to
okay.
this, and
okay.
they just
well,
explode.
It kind of sounds like we're arriving at the crux here then, as to, you know, how the kind of dynamic here is either kind of like harmonious or...
Or no.
Or have, as you said, yeah, so... So that's, yeah, well, really, yeah, well, it kind of comes down to strong views or letting go of strong views. And, yeah, well, there's plenty of Buddhist teachings exactly about
letting go of views.
Letting go of these strong views, yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay, well, this is very helpful. And yeah, like, I'm I don't know, like, it. I guess it's just kind of reassuring then to see that, how can I put it, even though Bodhi Heart has a different structure, like a management kind of structure, or you know, like the way it's administered, or the way it's, you know, nonetheless, the Buddha ends up being exactly correct that, you know, all these principles of that he explained, like, you know, getting along and not holding him to strong views, that ends up being the well, kind of the crux at the end of the day as to whether it kind of works and harmoniously. And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you then. Thank you. Well, I kind of feel, this is plenty for now. This is, thank you for this. Yeah. It's a good talk, and I'm kind of glad we had it.
Right.
And I'm, it's given me new perspective on this, people taking their smartphone pictures at lunch and videos and stuff. So, okay.
Because I would say, like, that to me is like one of the small things. Because I mean, like, those holding strong view, I've met, like, Mahayana Tibetan monks that complain, like, oh, all Theravada, they are so selfish. You know, they only practice for their own enlightenment. They don't save everyone else. Then in my position, of course, I have to defend the Theravada. I'm like, no. Many so-called arahants, you know, many monks that people acknowledge as arahant, they themselves don't call themselves arahant, but many people acknowledge them as arahant. I don't see them just sitting around, shaking their legs, or just sitting in the cave. But rather, many people find them, you know, ask for advice. They give very good advice. They help them. They teach the Dharma actively. That's helping people. you know. And it's because you're coming from your view so strongly that, oh, all Theravada is like this. It's rather sad that you are not able to see that they actually go beyond that. And again, it's the same. Like when I go to the Theravada, some monks are like, oh, this Mahayana, the way they practice, or, you know, the Buddha never talked about the Prajna Paramita or Heart Sutra or whatever sutra, all this is written. I'm like, okay, but does that mean that the Mahayana monk go about killing people? Or they go around stealing things? You know, or even you say that, oh, your Vinaya is very good, and, you know, monks that hold money, Thai monks that hold money, they're not good. Does it mean that these Thai monks, they're not doing anything good at all? Or the Dharma that they're teaching is wrong? You know? So, again, if you want to hold on to this, it's fine. That's your view, you see. But it's kind of sad because it kind of makes you very selfish. Like, that become your own ego. How do you say? You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, you kind of like a righteous indignation, maybe.
Yeah, but yeah. Again, that is coming from the ego point of view, which yeah. we are not yeah. supposed to be doing. We are yeah. supposed to be letting go of ego.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so I'm like, it's okay. If you stay here longer, then you will learn how to change.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, so, but to me, like, you know, even when I first came, I actually started off in the Sri Lankan Orthodox tradition. Because most English-speaking, especially from Penang, English-speaking Buddhists, we actually come from Mahindrama Temple, and that's where they teach Orthodox Sri Lankan style.
Okay.
And again, the view there is very, very strong. It's like, you must do this, you must do that, you cannot do this, you cannot do that. All monks that do this is not right monks, you know. And when I first came out, when I first got exposed to the Mahayana tradition, the Tibetan tradition, and I start to see, like, oh, why am I behaving in this way, in this manner? And is this what actually the Buddha, you know, is trying to teach us? And if I keep on to this, you know, the only one suffering is me. I feel upset, you know, when I see them, like, oh, I don't want them. But the only one upset is me, not them. You know, but when I learn to let go, it's like, oh, it's okay. You know, every person, every individual, every monk, they're still human. They're still practicing. You know, they have their own idiosyncrasy, their own behavior, their own views. They're entitled to that. Perfectly fine. They want to hold their views. Perfectly fine. No issue. But for me, myself, if I'm able to open up, I'm the one that gets the benefit. You see, because I get to talk to Burmese monks, I get to get the so-called wisdom from them. I can talk to Theravada monks, to even Tibetan monks, I can get the wisdom from them. I'm the one who's not losing out. But when, if let's say I'm holding too strongly onto the Orthodox tradition, then it's like, oh, they're all not good. Then the only one losing out on me. You see, and that's why when they come to my office, they get a bit shocked. And in fact, that's like a filter for me. When they come to our office, they see, you know, Theravada monks, Tibetan Thangka, Mahayana Kuan Yin. That's the first filter, because if they cannot handle that, they just say, oh, it's okay, I find other center to go. You see? But for those who are able to accept, it's like, oh, no issue, you know, all this is within the Buddhist ambit, so to speak. And if they're able to accept, they actually get a lot of things. You know? Because when they come, they're able to talk to monks of different tradition, they get to exchange views. In fact, many monks that come from different tradition, when they sit down, they actually then get to be invited to countries that they never thought of going. You know, they never thought they'd be going to, but they actually get invited there. So like many Western monks that come following Thai style, you know, get invited to Korea, they get to go there, you know. Places where they thought they would never go, but they get to go. So a lot of opportunities, a lot of avenues open up if you're not so strict. You know, doesn't mean that you have to give everything up. Doesn't mean that, oh, you give up on your views of not holding money. And I actually think that's something good. You know, if you don't hold on to money, it's a very good practice. So doesn't mean that, oh, just because I want to mix, I have to give something. No, you still hold on to your practice of not giving, of not holding on to money. But rather you work with the system, like, okay, now I know I'm going traveling. If I'm not holding money, then how do I go about it? can I get someone who can help me to arrange things? Mm-hmm. So that's why my position as administrator is to make sure all of things works. So like, for example, if you yourself, you don't touch money, you tell me like, oh, you need to go typing, then that responsibility will be mine to take care of. Then I have to make sure that, okay, I get you from point A to point B as smoothly as possible without any hiccup. So that will be my responsibility to play. You see?
Thanks for that.
So the position I'm in is very unique in that sense. I get to, and that's also where I actually get to learn a lot of things. And it's a good practice for me because every time I meet different individuals, I would say that it's also an opportunity for me to kind of change my gear, so to speak, because then I would need to learn how to deal with another person on a different level, different way of practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually reflect on my practice, like, oh, am I holding onto this view too strongly? You know, or am I able to just accept everyone as they are? Do I get upset? If upset, why am I upset? Who is upset? The ego upset? Or really something else is happening? Then I actually get a lot of practice from this. Hmm.
Okay, well, thank you, brother.
I hope good, I didn't good. Overload
no, no,
you.
No, this is a good interview, yeah. Yeah, well, it's it's good food for thought.
Hmm. Yes, like I said, Bodhiha is a very, very unique place, unique situation. In fact, I tell many people, this place is actually a testing ground. It's a testing ground because this is a place where you actually test, like.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely agree to that. You know,
your
like
practice,
anyone
your
who
views.
Comes here has to, you know, yeah. Like I would say that it is more difficult than being in a normal monastery where you need more willpower of your own to
yes.
run your own schedule and kind of
yes.
stick with your practice.
Correct.
Yeah.
So in this place where we don't have like a set schedule, like I say, like in a different like Thai style, it's like, oh, you, by this time you need to do this, this. We don't have that here. And it's really depending on you yourself with your own practice. Because after all, that's what it is. You know, when you practice the Dharma, it's about your relationship between yourself and your own practice. It's not about you and the people around you. You see, it's about you and your own practice. How honest are you with the way you look at things, with the way you handle your own mind, the way you handle your own view, and the way you take care of your own practice. You know, it's not about looking about over other shoulders, like, oh, are they doing things right or wrong, but rather about more looking into yourself and like, how am I doing things? You know, if there's no big monk, senior monk looking over my shoulder, do I still meditate as long?
Yeah.
Or do I cut corners?
You're right. Yeah, that is the test.
Huh.
Yeah.
Because
that applies any time a monk leaves their monastery, really. Like if they go and visit their family or whatever.
Right. But again, like I said, most monks, they would tend to stick to their own lineage monastery. So it's like they are comfortable with, oh, I'm used to this timetable, you know, I don't have to make any changes. But when they come here, they're totally thrown into deep water. It's like, there you go. The deep blue sea, enjoy yourself.
That's funny.
Then they actually get to see their own practice. So even, not even monks, even yogis as well, when they come here, they say they want to do their own self-practice. And then they ask me like, oh, what is the timetable? I'm like, no, there's no timetable. Timetable is your own. I'm not going to go around, you know, Bodhiha with a big Zen stick, hitting people like, oi, do your meditation,
right.
Not on the phone. I'm not going to do that. But you have to take care of your own practice. You have to do what you think is necessary, what is important to you. If you feel that meditation is important, then you do more of it. It's as simple as that. It's between you and your own practice. So that's why I said Bodhiha is a very interesting place. Because of this system that we have in, it's something very unique that's not common that you can find in Malaysia or even other place. And yeah, when people come here, then they really get to honestly reflect on themselves, like, you know, what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this what the Buddha actually meant when he advised us to do this, advised us to do that? Is that how the spirit, you know, of the sutta that the Buddha taught, what is it really finally? So that's why here it's very interesting when you see like different, like for me as an administrator, it gets really fun when you see all the different tradition coming together and just say they're having their meal together or something like that. Then you see how they react. It's actually something interesting, and most of the time it's very inspiring. Because you can see that, you know, even very senior monks, like, oh, in their own tradition, respected as Lompo, or, you know, in the Tibetan, like, Rinpoche. But when they come here, they are just so open, you know, they can eat together, they can talk, very open with each other. They are not like, oh, you know, I have to quietly eat my meal, I don't talk to you, you don't do this. It doesn't happen here. It's very, very nice, very harmonious, and it's very inspiring. Especially the sadha part, because when different devotees come, they really see, oh, you know, this is what the Buddhist community is about. You know, members of sangha from different tradition able to sit down, able to talk, and they get inspired. Like, oh, the Buddha's Dharma is really being practiced. You know, even they have different opinion, different view, but they are able to talk nicely. They are able to, you know, talk things out nicely, and they get very inspired. And it's very good, because
that inspires me too. When you know, even just basic things are openly discussed, and they aren't they aren't a big problem. You know, like you know, like it goes such a long way if one monk says to another, like, oh well, in my tradition, it's our custom to eat silently. Would it be okay if we talked after the meal instead?
Right.
You know, and then the other monk's like, oh, okay, fine, yeah, well, why don't we talk, you know, in half an hour then or something?
Right.
I'd like that. Or you know what I mean? And just a little communication like that goes a tremendously long way.
Right.
Yeah. Or this other monk says, oh, well, you know what? Why don't we talk now? Because I would enjoy that. I would enjoy some conversation over the food. You know, that's most Westerners, like, if you invite someone over for supper, you darn well want to talk during the meal. That's that's the enjoyment of company, you know. So that's actually a Western value. And there's a lot of Westerners who, you know, would find it somehow really restrictive or wrong or something. Like, what, you wouldn't talk at all when you eat together?
Right.
Why would you even eat together if you're not going to talk? You know. So, but you know, just kind of stating like, oh, you know. Little things about, like, would you be willing to do this, or it's our custom to do that, or, you know, what do you think of this, or how do you feel about that, and just kind of, just little things like that really go a long way, you know? Yeah, just a willingness to understand the other person, or ask, or whatever, or just kind of explain how you feel a little bit, or...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, this monk I mentioned a little earlier, Bhante Sangamaji, he actually he loves this sort of conversation, or this exact topic. There's this thing a lot of the Westerners study called nonviolent communication.
NVC.
So he really likes this, and he even ran a class of this at SBS. I don't claim to be an expert in it, but not even close, but you know what I mean. This stuff, there is kind of a science to it. You know, there's something to it. I for one would feel very inspired for this. You know, I'm not going to become a coach of NVC. I'm not going to be not going to represent their system. But you know what I mean. The direction they're moving is a very good one. Where you know. The right communication at the right time goes a really long way.
Right.
And the way it's spoken and the way it's, you know, listened to and received, you know, if it can be lighthearted, and then it's fine. It's
right.
Yeah, so...
But again, this type, like NVC, you know, I'm not saying that it's bad, but I prefer to subscribe to the Buddha's way, where, like, everything in their own time, their own place, so there's even a proper time for fighting, for arguing. But after that, when we're done, you know, gentlemen, shake hands... No hard feeling. I mean, being non-violent is something good, I agree, but sometimes you need to fight. Okay, not in the physical sense like punching or kicking, but you need to thrash out ideas. One thing is because, first of all, you get to air your view and you get to see how others respond to that view that you just aired, and also a time for you to see their view, you know. And in the middle of this type of lively discussion, you actually get to see, like, you know, if you actually use this moment to reflect, to like, oh, you know, what am I saying? How am I saying it? And it's actually a very good practice. And yeah, you actually learn more rather than, oh, you know, oh, I think if I say it now, we're going to fight. I'll find a better time, you know, to talk it out. And then maybe I'll talk it in such a way that he doesn't get upset, you know, or I talk it in such a way that I soothe him and I get very nice. But again, it becomes so artificial that, and worst case scenario, your message get lost in transit. You know, you might think that he understand what you're saying, but he might be interpreting it in his own way. You see, and because you're being so nice about it, he might even know that you're upset. You know, so at times when need be, yes, please air out your view. Oh, I'm not happy, it's like this. And then the other party get to explain themselves. And then you get to see, oh, they're coming from this position. You know, they actually have this view. They're coming from this position. This is why they act in this way. And then you see, oh, I'm coming from this way. Am I able to, you know, make it work together, so to speak? Make together doesn't mean we have to be totally 100% in sync, aligned. It doesn't mean
well,
that.
That's kind of impossible to hope for that. But
right. But at least we have no big conflict from practicing our own views.
Yeah. Well. Right. Huh. Well, in my ideal world, whenever new monks meet.
Mm.
Maybe not right away when they meet, but, you know, fairly soon after they have met, let's say within the first day or two, somehow or other, they make a bit of an arrangement to, you know, at least talk a little bit, you know, learn a little bit about the other person,
right.
Kind of where are they at, and what is important to them that they're kind of working on right now, or what is it...
Right.
That they're kind of there to, you know, why are they there? And what are they, you know, maybe try to get a sense of their motivation a little bit. Although
right.
that one's takes time to
right.
learn. A lot of people don't really let that out at first. But, so I don't know. It's just a little difficult. If a monk is too reclusive, then it's a little tricky to...
Yeah, we have a few monks come here like that, you know. There's one very taciturn, you know. You ask him something, he's like, but then you like this, Is this okay with you? And you don't know, like, you know, does he like it? Can he eat it? Don't know at all. But again, although the way he acts like this, but, you know, when he finishes his food, and in other actions, you can just see that he's very kind, he's very compassionate, you know. People that's hungry, you just take the food for them. But again, when he gives them, he's like, you know, or when he sees beggar, he's like, doesn't say much, but you can see from his action, you know, he's like, and then for us, then at my point, you know, when I see that, it's like, oh, you know, maybe that's his behavior. But even though he doesn't talk much, but you can see from his action, you know, he's doing something nice, something kind to people, he's compassionate. Just that, you know, he doesn't want to talk. That's the way he is.
Yeah, well,
you know, so we can't expect everyone to like, oh, you know, be buddy, be chummy,
well,
and then say everything.
Well, okay.
Right?
Ajahn Chah would actually do that sometimes, but like, that's my understanding of that is, this is just my own sort of understanding. Like, that shouldn't be used too often. It should maybe only be used once in a while. And I think the meaning of it is, it kind of goes something like, I don't want to take a stand yes or no on this issue at all.
Mm.
I don't even want to state my views. I don't even want to be pulled into this.
Mm.
I just want this thing to leave me alone. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's sort of like, don't even bug me with that thing.
Right.
It's kind of what it means.
Mm.
Yeah. And once in a while, I think that is kind of a skillful move to play. Sometimes you don't want to get sucked into a certain issue that's a sticky issue or something, but...
but for me, when I'm playing, you know, when I'm playing my role as administrator, that gets very frustrating, Because when you don't state a view and the devotees are asking me something and I can't answer them, that puts me in a difficult position. But again, that's a very good practice for me. Then, you know, I can actually reflect, oh, why, you know, why do I need, you know, to be able to answer everything? Right? And yeah. If I'm not able to answer, why am I so upset?
Being overly evasive is really difficult too, you know, just being a difficult person all the time.
Right, but this is not, again, like I said, I'm, you know, in my position, I'm able to accept people as they are. So no matter how they behave, you know, as long as they don't, like I said, they don't step out of line and create like a big havoc, then to me it's fine. You be you, no problem, we are all still practicing. You know, as long as no big havoc exploding, then okay, no issue, you know. But again, sometimes they get annoying. But again, the annoying is not the person per se, but the one who perceive that annoyance. So again, it's a good practice for them, a good reflection. So yeah, so that's why I say Bodhihat, very unique, very interesting, very hard testing ground.
Yeah, well, I bet a lot of pretty darn interesting stories have happened in 7 or 8 years.
Mm.
Anyway, but let's not delve into those today.
Mm.
But anyway, well, this is great, Brother Leonard, and yeah, this is maybe this is a good time to
yeah
to okay. Well, thank you so much, yeah. And.